Prithu was performing the last horse sacrifice, the Ashwamedha Yajna, King Indra, invisible to everyone, stole the horse intended for sacrifice. He did this because of his great envy of King Prithu. Please repeat. When Maharaj Prithu was performing the last horse sacrifice, Ashwamedha Yajna, King Indra, invisible to everyone, stole the horse intended for sacrifice. He did this because of his great envy of King Prithu. Purport. King Indra is known as Saptakratu, which indicates that he has performed 100 horse sacrifices, Ashwamedha Yajna. We should know, however, that the animals sacrificed in the yajna were not killed. If the Vedic mantras were properly pronounced during the yajna, the animal sacrifice would come out again with new life. That is the test for a successful yajna. When King Prithu was performing 100 yajnas, Indra became very envious because he did not want anyone to excel him. Being an ordinary living entity, he became envious of King Prithu, and making himself invisible, he stole the horse and thus impeded the yajnic performance. We'll also do text 12. Tamatrir Bhagavan Aikshat Tvaramanam Vihayasa Amuktam Ibapakantam Yodhane Dharma Viprama. Translation. When King Indra was taking away the horse, he dressed himself to appear as a liberated person. Actually, this dress was a form of cheating, who had falsely created an impression of religion. When Indra went into outer space in this way, the great sage Atri saw him, and he understood the whole situation. Purport. The word Pakanda used in this verse is sometimes pronounced Pashanda. Both of these words indicate an impostor who presents himself as a very religious person, but who is actually sinful. Indra took up the saffron-colored dress as a way of cheating others. This saffron dress has been misused by many impostors who present themselves as liberated persons or incarnations of God. In this way, people are cheated. As we have mentioned many times, the conditioned soul has a tendency to cheat. Therefore, this quality is also visible in a person like King Indra. It is understood that even King Indra is not liberated from the clutches of material contamination. Thus the words amuktam eva, meaning as if he were liberated, are used. The saffron dress worn by a sannyasi announces to the world that he has renounced all worldly affairs and is simply engaged in the service of the Lord. Such a devotee is actually a sannyasi, or a liberated person. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, verse 1, it is said, Anashrita kama phalam karyam karma karotiya na sannyasi cha yogi cha na niragnir na chariya. One who is unattached to the fruits of his work, and who works as he is obligated, is in the renounced order of life, and he is the true mystic, not he who lights no fire and performs no work. In other words, one who offers the results of his activities to the Supreme Personality of Godhead is actually a sannyasi and a yogi. Cheating sannyasis and yogis have existed since the time of Prita Maharaj's sacrifice. This cheating was very foolishly introduced by King Indra. In some ages, such cheating is very prominent, and in other ages, not so prominent. It is the duty of a sannyasi to be very cautious, because as stated by Lord Chaitanya, sannyasira apachidra savaloke gaya, a little spot in a sannyasi's character will be magnified by the public. Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila 12:51. Therefore, unless one is very sincere and serious, he should not take up the order of sannyas. One should not use this order as a means to cheat the public. It is better not to take up sannyas in this age of Kali, because such provocations are very strong in this age. Only a very exalted person advanced in spiritual understanding should attempt to take up sannyas. One should not adopt this order as a means of livelihood for some material purpose. Translation. Translation again to the two verses, 11 and 12. When Prita Maharaj was performing the last horse sacrifice, Ashwamedha Yajna, King Indra, invisible to everyone, stole the horse intended for sacrifice. He did this because of his great envy of King Prithu. When King Indra was taking away the horse, he dressed himself to appear as a liberated person. Actually, this dress was a form of cheating, for it falsely created an impression of religion. When Indra went into outer space in this way, the great sage Atri saw him and understood the whole situation. Oma gyan timinandasya ginangina shalakaya chakshuri militam jenatasmai sigurave namaha Sri Chaitanya manovistam stapitam jenabhutale shvayam rupakadamayam dadantisva padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhaktivindam Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram Hare Ram Anam Anam Hare Om Am Hrim Shrom Om Farom Tataka Hataka Kesha Gajalat Parikalochana Padharaka Naka Sparsa Divasingha Namastate. What are all these helicopters? Is it like that every morning? Huh? It sounds like a Sarajevo or... So in these two verses of Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear how King Indra, being envious of Maharaj Prithu, stole his sacrificial horse in the guise of a renunciate or a sannyasi. So the first point I think we should discuss is the envy of King Indra, which caused him to act irreligiously. Behind every effect there's a cause. So he stole the sacrificial horse, and Prabhupada said he did it because he was very envious. So although we know that King Indra, being a demigod, is sometimes classified as a devotee of the Lord because the demigods are devotees, still, because he has material desires, he's described in these purports as a conditioned soul. In a previous purport, Prabhupada said, the defects of material life are so strong that due to contamination, King Indra became envious of Maharaj Prithu. For although he was a devotee, because he still harbored material desires within his heart, he became envious. Envy, Srila Prabhupada has said, is the cardinal sin, or the original sin of the living entity. Prabhupada said we were all originally Krishna conscious living entities. We were once in the sport of Krishna, but somehow we became envious of Krishna's exalted position and thus we fell to the material world. Our attempt to imitate Krishna here is called material desire. Spiritual desire means for the pleasure of the Lord, and material desire means for my pleasure. It's black and white. The desire to please the Lord is called spiritual desire, and the desire to please my senses is called material desire. So our attempt to imitate Krishna here is called material desire, which Krishna says burns like fire and is never satiated. Avrittam ginam etena. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, thus the wise living entity's pure consciousness becomes covered by his eternal enemy in the form of lust, which is never satiated and burns like fire. Prabhupada created an analogy out of this shloka, actually. He said that material desire, when we try to extinguish our desires by engaging in material life, it's like pouring kerosene on a fire. If there's a fire and you try to extinguish it, if you pour kerosene, what happens? It becomes even more powerful. So if we attempt to satisfy our desires in a material way, the effect is those material desires actually become stronger. Better to tolerate them. And better yet is to awaken our spiritual desire. Then we can actually be satisfied. To try to satisfy our material desires by sense gratification is like scratching an itch. If you've got an itch here and you scratch it, then, get that page back, please. But when, after a few moments, what happens is the itch comes back again. Just like people who take intoxication, they engage in illicit sex. And for a few moments, they're apparently satisfied. But very quickly, the itch comes back again. All the way to the end of life, these material desires are never satiated. Krishna says they burn like fire and are never satiated. So even in old age, when one has a body which cannot fulfill material desires, the desires are still burning. It's not that in old age, because you become old, that you no longer have those desires. The desires are exactly as they were when you were sweet 16. 16, that's, you know, the blooming glory of youth. After that, everything begins to decrease. So at 16, the desires are very strong, and you have a body which you can try to fulfill those desires. But you never fulfill them. So as age goes on, you grow older. When you're old man or old woman, you don't have a body to fulfill those desires. But the desires are just like when you were 16. So imagine how frustrating old age is. Of course, it's frustrating from A to Z material life, but there's a particular type of frustration in old age, that you have those burning desires, but your body, you don't have the senses which are capable of fulfilling them or trying to fulfill them. So old age is like, it's just another, just like when you're young, you're a baby. You have very strong desires, but because you're a baby, you can't fulfill them. You're just laying in the crib, and no one can understand you. You're crying, oh, I have a stomach ache, too much milk. And mother's thinking you're crying because you want milk. So she stuffs the bottle in your mouth, and then she forces you to drink, and the stomach ache becomes worse. So you have these desires when you're a young baby, but you can't fulfill them because you're just lying in the crib, gooing and guying. You can't do anything. And as you grow up, you know, you think, ah, now I have a body to fulfill. But that stage neither you can fulfill. The pleasure is just like the water falling on the flower of the lotus. It's there for a moment, just like water off the duck's back. It's there and it's gone. And in the old age, another type of frustration. Again, like a baby, you have the body, but you can't fulfill the desires. So Krishna says that these material desires burn like fire, but are never satiated. Now, because each and every conditioned soul is unsatiated and unsatisfied in its attempt to enjoy material life, he naturally becomes envious of others who are apparently enjoying. This is the subtle understanding. No one is really satisfied, but material life makes it look like you can be satisfied. So I only know my body, I don't know your body. It is not all one. I am you, I am me, and you are you. So I cannot understand the pains and pleasures of your body. So material life creates a facade of enjoyment. It looks like people are enjoying. But inside, each individual is frustrated. And he's thinking, oh, the others are enjoying. They have nice clothes. They have boyfriends. They have girlfriends. They're becoming famous. And little old me, I'm trying to enjoy this world, but I'm remaining frustrated. So you become envious. Now everyone is experiencing the same phenomena. This is Maya's trick. Although everyone is suffering, each individual is thinking, others are enjoying. Look at the money. Look at the fame. Gyanam, dhanam, sundarim, I don't have any of this. So you become envious of others. Because your material desires are burning like fire and are never satiated, you become envious of those who are apparently enjoying. In this way, one becomes more and more entangled in materialistic life. But the devotee is actually freed from this. Because a devotee has no material desires. A pure devotee has no material desires. And therefore he's freed from envy. Krishna bhakta nishkama ata eva shanta bhukti mukti siddhi kam akaleya shanta. Krishna bhakta nishkama. Nishkama, kama means like lust, or you can also say desire, material desire. Krishna bhakta nishkama. A devotee, he has no material desires. He easily renounces those material desires by getting a higher taste of Krishna consciousness. Param drishta nivartante. You can only give up something which is inferior when you experience something superior. This is a natural law of nature. That if you have something which is very valuable, you never give it up. But if someone gives you something more valuable, you'll exchange it easily. If you have 1,000 rand, you're holding on to it very tightly. But if someone says, can you exchange that for 2,000 rand? Oh, okay, easy. So you can give up something which is inferior if you get something which is superior. So because devotees have that superior taste, which essentially comes from what? Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. They get that taste in the holy name. Nama Chintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Vigraha. Krishna's there in all his opulences. The name, the fame, the form, the paraphernalia, the pastimes of Krishna, all present in that Shabda Brahma. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare. Therefore Rupa Goswami, he says, I do not know how much nectar these two syllables, Krishna, contain. I wish I had thousands of mouths and millions of ears so I could relish the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. So renunciation is not difficult for a devotee. For a materialistic person who's attempting through some other yogic process to give up his material desires, it's a struggle. But for a devotee, from the very moment he comes in contact with Krishna consciousness, he can easily renounce those things. So Krishna Bhakta Nishkama. Nishkama. Kama means desires, Nish means without. Krishna Bhakta Nishkama. He has no material desires. Therefore, Krishna Bhakta Nishkama. Ata eva shanta. He's peaceful. But bhukti, mukti, siddhikam, akalaya shanta. The material enjoyer, those desiring liberation, those engaged in the mystic process of yoga, bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kam, akalaya shanta. They're not peaceful. They're always disturbed. So devotee, how can he be envious of anyone? He's actually in a superior position. I mean, he is in a superior position. Of course, he's humble, but he's in a superior position. He's above the bhuktis, he's above the muktis, he's above the yogis. Because he's engaged in pure devotional service to the Lord. They all have some personal motivation, even the yogis or the jnanis. With all due respect, they've given up material life in a gross way, but not a subtle way. Because their aspiration for transcendence has some personal motive in it. They want to merge with God, they want mystic powers. But a devotee of the Lord, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavicham, va, jagadisha, kamae, mama janmani, janmani, ishware, bhavata, bhakti, ahaitakitwaye. I have no desire to accumulate wealth, my Lord, to enjoy beautiful women, to acquire fame and reputation. All that I want is that I might have your causeless devotional service in my life, birth after birth. Ahaitakya pratiyata. This is unmotivated, pure devotional service. So because a devotee is not frustrated, he's not envious of others. He actually sees others suffering, even demigods. Even if you offered to a devotee to go to Svarga Lok to enjoy like the demigods, he'd spit at the thought. It's like Yamunacharya. He said, when I think of how I enjoyed sex life before I was a devotee of the Lord, I spit at the thought. Now that my mind has been engaged in the transcendental thoughts of the Supreme Lord and his wonderful pastimes. So even the so-called opulence of the heavenly planets, what is it essentially? It falls within four categories. Material life can easily be classified in four different ways. It may appear very, you know, mind-boggling to a materialist, but a devotee, he just categorizes in four ways. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. It may come in this color, it may come in this shape or form, it may come in this particular description, but a devotee, he sees very clearly through the eyes of Shastra. It's either eating, it's sleeping, it's mating or defending. There's nothing new. Puna punas charvita charvananam. It's just chewing the chewed as an Indra Gopa or as a Brahma. That's all. It's chewing the chewed. Either you chew it as Indra Gopa, yum 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 yum, eating, sleeping, sex. Either you have sex with a she Indra Gopa or you have sex with a demigoddess. For thousands of years. Sex can last in the heavenly planets for thousands of years. That's why they want to go there, by the Karmakanda section of the Vedas. Because they hear, by going there, you can have sex for 10,000 years.
and the woman doesn't get pregnant. She gets pregnant at the end of life. And then a baby comes out, he grows up into a man, he walks away. None of this changing the nappies, dealing with the stool and urine, dealing with teenage problems. No. You enjoy sex 10,000 years. At the end of life, conception, birth, grow up, off with it, you know. Oh, I want to go there. But a devotee knows that this pleasure, you take all the pleasure of material life and you put it next to one Govinda Kirtan. It doesn't match. The scale would just go, right? Just one good kirtan of the holy name. You put all the pleasure of material life on one side of that scale. Bhur, Bhuvaha, Svaha, the lower planetary systems, the middle planetary systems, the higher planetary systems. If you could condense it, right? They do things like that. Now they condense everything smaller and smaller. So much knowledge is now in a microchip. Now they have the Pentium chip. You can get it in instant. You just push the button. The full works of Shakespeare. So they, science, so maybe one day, in their desire to enjoy, they'll condense it all into one little pill. Right? You'll take that pill, and you'll have the pleasure of the lower planetary systems, the middle planetary systems, and the higher planetary systems in one pill. Wow, we thought in the 60s we could do it with LSD. Right? Just one pill. Wow, I'm God. Lucy in the sky with diamonds. But it didn't work. It lasted a few hours, and the next morning, you're all disoriented and frustrated and bewildered. And so let's say maybe they do it. They get a pill together, and it's like the epitome of all sense gratification. You put that pill on one side of the scale and you put the Hare Krishna mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. On the other side, the Hare Krishna mantra will immediately be seen to be superior. So devotee doesn't struggle. If he's chanting, he doesn't struggle with the senses. Most of our problems in Krishna consciousness can be traced back to improper chanting. If we're losing the taste, oh, it's the temple president, oh, it's the facilities, oh, it's this Prabhu or that Prabhu, or it's this or it's that. But actually, if we trace back our dissatisfaction in Krishna consciousness, we'll find it's because we're lacking that higher taste, which comes from attentive chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama. So devotee is not envious of anyone, naturally, because he's experiencing the higher taste, and he wants to give it to others. King Indra, being a demigod, is a mixed devotee with material desires, therefore he's envious of Maharaj Pritha's exalted position. You might wonder, King Indra is in such an exalted position, he's demigod, he's an agent of the Lord, he's an administrator in the Lord's kingdom of the material world, how can he be envious? But unless you take care of those desires, lust, anger, greed, envy in the heart, then they'll tend to grow. They'll tend to grow. So you have to pull those weeds out of the heart. You can't leave them there. If you leave them there, then it's like, you know, they have two types of tumors. There's the non-malignant and the malignant tumor. And although the malignant tumor looks very small, if you ignore it, watch out, it's going to grow. The doctor says, just like I know one of my disciples, she had breast cancer. So when it was first detected, it was a small little lump, and she said, it's nothing. I'll just, you know, it'll go away. But now, some years later, it's grown very big, and, you know, so that's a very serious thing. So you cannot ignore the material desires. They're malignant. They're there to grow. That's the nature of those desires. So if you don't take care of it in the beginning, that malignant desire will eventually manifest. It'll become a real problem. So in the beginning, we should root out those desires as quickly as possible. They don't choke. They're actually weeds. They don't choke the real plant of devotional service. You have to know what's a plant and what's a weed. If you think, oh, this desire is very nice, lust, anger, greed, you'll be surprised. It'll turn into an ugly tree. So you have to know what is a weed and what is a real plant. Within the heart, there's various seeds. By the mercy of the spiritual master, there's the bhakti lata bij also. Brahmanda Brahmati Kon, Bhagavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasad, Bhai Bhakti Lata Bij. The time of initiation, the spiritual master, the disciplic succession, plant that seed, that Bhakti Lata Bij within our heart. So it's there, but there's other seeds also. Rupa Goswami describes very nicely that the seeds of material desire are also there within the heart. Some have manifest right now, some will manifest in the immediate future, some will manifest in the distant future. But those seeds are there of material desires. So now we have two seeds in our heart. We have the seed of unwanted desires, and we have the seed, the seed-like form of love of God. So with the help of the spiritual master, we can distinguish which is which, because in the initial stage, we may not be able to clearly see. We may not be able to see, being bewildered by Maya, we may think that this desire is actually Krishna conscious when it's actually a material desire. So therefore, at every step of the way, we have to consult with the spiritual master, with his representatives, with senior advanced devotees, who are able to distinguish between what is a weed and what is a bhakti lata bij. Just like I remember a few years ago, Bimal Prasad planted a tamal tree or something in the garden here? Siddhabakul. He got the seed from the original Siddhabakul that Haresh Thakur was chanting under. You know, he was chanting the Siddhabakul tree. So that tree, you can imagine, with Haridas Thakur chanting under it his whole life, what that tree was like. That tree was permeated with pure love of God. So Bhima Prasad, he got a seed from that tree. He planted it in the garden here, Siddhabakul tree. The son of the originals. And one of our gardeners was just going through, the tree was about that big, he pulled it out of some weed, threw it away. He thought that it was a weed, when actually it was a pure devotee. It's a Kalpa Viksha tree, an eternal tree of desire, spiritual, fulfill your spiritual desires. So because he wasn't trained properly, he thought, oh, this is a weed, but actually it was a spirit. So we may make the same mistake, because we're all in the neophyte stage of devotional service. So we may think that this Krishna consciousness, this is some problem for me. This better I take up the other seeds that are there. This is too difficult, this process. Too much austerity and penance. I have to work all day long to chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Just eat this, you know, I can't eat what I want. I have to eat food from the... This is a bother. Pull out this weed and I'll water the other weed, the Ananthas, less, and then I'll be happy. No. We cannot think independently. All our thoughts have to be guided by the lotus instructions of our spirit, the words emanating from your lotus mouth. Those are our real desires. So we have to be able to distinguish. So, Indra was a mixed devotee. He had spiritual desire, obviously, because sometimes the demigods get to see Krishna, their servants. But sometimes, because they haven't uprooted those desires, they're not taking care of them. They're watering those desires along with the desires of devotional service. In other words, they're engaged in sense gratification at the same time of devotional service. This is very risky. To call oneself a devotee while at the same time to water the desires of sense gratification is a very dangerous situation. So we have to be attentive. We have to do the do's and the don'ts. Not that you just do the do's and don't care the don'ts. You can't chant Hare Krishna and just follow three regulative principles. Right? Some devotees, they have three regulative principles. No meat, fish, or eggs. Yes. I follow three regulative principles. No meat, no fish, and no eggs. So that's dangerous. Very dangerous. So as quickly as possible, because we all come with material desires, as quickly as possible, we have to rise to the stage of Dhruva Maharaj. Dhruva Maharaj said, you know, I came to you looking for broken pieces of glass, and in your association I've discovered a valuable jewel, the brilliant diamond of pure devotional service. Now I have no desire to ask any benedictions from you. So devotee has to be like that. He knows the desires are there, and with the help of his spiritual master, he knows what's a weed and what's a bhakti lata bija. And he waters very carefully the bhakti lata bija, and he uproots the seeds of material desire. But Indra didn't do it. He didn't do it. Maybe he was a devotee, but because he wasn't uprooting very carefully the don'ts, they overcame, they overwhelmed him. It's the don'ts. So can you go to the doctor? Two things when you go to the doctor. He gives you the do's and the don'ts to become healthy. Take this medicine, don't go out in the cold. In the beginning, when Prabhupada was lecturing at 26 Second Avenue, the devotees would sit in the lecture and appreciate very much and chant Hare Krishna and dance in ecstasy, and then they'd go out and have a cigarette break. At least they had the decency not to smoke in the temple in front of Prabhupada, but they'd go outside, they'd light up a cigarette. That was a great lecture, wasn't it? I mean, Prabhupada was speaking about renunciation and giving up, you know, sense gratification. Wow, I really like Swamiji. Then they go down to the donut shop and they, you know, they're dunking donuts. They were dunking donut disciples. They were, you know, talking about the class, but they were dunking donuts in coffee and eating. So Prabhupada knew. So one day he was walking past the donut shop and he said, "What is this shop?" Disciples said, you know, some disciples were inside, so they were covering themselves, so Prabhupada wouldn't see. And other disciples said, "Oh, that's a donut shop, Prabhupada." Prabhupada said, no, it's not a donut shop. They thought, well, Swamiji's from India, he doesn't know what a donut is. So they said, "No, Swamiji, it is a donut shop." And Prabhupada said, "It is not a donut shop." Prabhupada, in the West, we call them donut shops. And Prabhupada said, "It is a do-not shop." It's a do-not shop. You do not go in that shop and eat those donuts. Yes, Srila Prabhupada. So in the beginning we may come with those aspirations, but if we very seriously chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, we'll be able to distinguish ourselves as well, what is right and what is wrong. So Indra was envious of Maharaj Prithu's position, because unlike Indra, who had to struggle for his sense gratification, Maharaj Prithu was naturally endowed with all these opulences. Wherever there's Narayan, Lakshmi is also present. You can't separate the eternal couple. In Golok, there's separation. But in Vaikuntha, Lakshmi is never separated from Narayan. She's always on the chest of Narayan. And wherever there's Narayan, there's also Lakshmi. So if one properly worships Narayan, the blessings of Lakshmi will also be there. So Maharaj Prithu, he was Shaktavasha avatar. He was an empowered incarnation. There's different types of incarnations. He was not Vishnu Tattva, but he was Jiva Tattva, but particularly empowered by the Lord to act as his fully empowered representative. So he naturally possessed all that. So the demons are always envious of the devotees. How do these Hare Krishna devotees get all these opulences? They don't work. They don't know the secret. The Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, "In the beginning I sent forth generations of men and demigods and blessed them that by the performance of this yajna, all desirable things will be bestowed upon you." So a devotee may work, of course. It's not that he's just chanting all day, but he may work. But he doesn't work, you know, unnecessarily. He works to keep the body and soul together. You know, he may have a business, that's all right. But the real source of his opulence is Krishna's mercy. The real source of his opulence is Krishna's mercy. In the Krishna book, Prabhupada says that the Lord is always ready to bestow his full opulences upon his fully surrendered devotee. Now, what are the Lord's opulences? He has six: beauty, fame, strength, wealth, knowledge, renunciation. Now if you study a devotee, you'll see he also possesses beauty. Even he's old, he may be also beautiful. Chanakapanda says the beauty of a cuckoo is in her sweet singing. The beauty of a woman is her chastity. The beauty of an old scholar may be his knowledge. The beauty of a sage is his ability to forgive. It's like when Prabhupada was walking across the street in London one time, a policeman grabbed Shyama Sundar and said, "Look, that man is beautiful, he's glowing." So the real beauty is the soul, not this body. So as the beauty of the soul becomes uncovered through the process of devotional service, the spiritual senses become awakened. The senses means body, isn't it? A body is composed of senses. So as the spiritual senses become manifest through the process of devotional service, one appears very beautiful. You can't distinguish. You don't think this is an old man. Prabhupada was not, we didn't think of Prabhupada as an old man. When I looked at Prabhupada, he was as giant as the sky and very powerful. When I came close to him for the first time, I was amazed. He was so small. Because of his Krishna consciousness, he appeared powerful and dynamic. At the same time, beautiful and delicate and soft like a rose. So devotees naturally endowed with the opulences of the Supreme Personality of Godhead because of his exclusive devotion to the Lord. Ananyas chintayantomam yejana payupasyate tesham nitta biyuktanam yogakshemam bahamyaham. But those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating upon my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So devotee doesn't try independently to acquire anything. His only business is to serve the Lord, and if the Lord feels it necessary, he'll bestow upon that devotee whatever is necessary to serve him. Prabhupada was happy sitting in Vrindavan chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram. But he wanted to share that with the people of the West. So he was happy with nothing. But when he came to the West, Prabhupada said, to push on a movement like this, you need men, you need money, you need capital. So everything came. Although Prabhupada was an expert businessman, he didn't come to America and engage in business and get all that. How did he get it? He got it by the mercy of the Lord. He came with 40 rupees, $6, and in 10 years, he was one of the richest men in the world. He had palatial palaces everywhere, L.A., London, Bombay, Vrindavan, Mayapur. And what was his secret? His business ability? He renounced that at 50 years of age, 55 years of age. What was his secret? His pure devotion to Krishna. So therefore, ananyas chintayantam mam. The Lord, yogakshemam bahamyaham, he preserved what he had, his 40 rupees, and he provided what he lacked. Actually, he preserved that. Prabhupada never spent that 40 rupees when he was in America. When he went back to India in 1971, he took a taxi from Delhi to Vrindavan. He paid the taxi wall, and the taxi wall drove off with his 40 rupees. He was owing him something like 20 rupees for whatever ride it was. He stole it. And Prabhupada, Krishna preserved even the 40 rupees Prabhupada had. He didn't spend one cent, one rupee, one rand, $1 in America. He just preached Krishna consciousness. And because he was a pure preacher of the holy name, the Lord provided devotees, capital, buildings, etc. So we must always remember the formula for success in Krishna consciousness. Preaching is the essence, books are the basis, utility is the principle, and purity is the force. That doesn't mean we shouldn't start businesses. Of course, that's also Krishna's plan, because in Vedic cultures there's the Vaishyas, who are part of Vanashram Dharma, who provide funds for the preaching, for the maintenance of the temple through business. But no businessman will be successful in his business unless he's pure. No devoted businessman. There's a saying from the West Coast, I heard it recently, West Coast of America, that how does a devotee get a small business going? He starts a big business, and in a few months, it's a small business. Because most devotees are not very expert at business. So you want to start a small business? Start out as a big business. In a few months, it'll be a small business. But as we become more purified, we'll become more expert in our activities. We'll become more expert pujaris. We'll become more expert sankirtan devotees. We'll become more expert administrators. We'll become more expert businessmen. One can do anything for Krishna, but purity is the force. So in most cases, non-devotees can only dream of the opulence that Srila Prabhupada had, only dream of the opulence that Prithu Maharaj had. So what do? Because they don't have that yogakshemam bahamyaham, that mercy of the Lord is providing this facility for preaching, they have to acquire that by illegal and devious means. Krishna discusses that in Bhagavad Gita. He says, chintam aparyameyam cha palayantam upashrita kama pabhoga parama etavad iti nishtaya. They believe that to gratify the senses unto the end of life is the prime necessity of human civilization. Thus, there is no end to their anxiety. Bound by hundreds and thousands of desires, by lust and by anger, they secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. Etavad ita nishtaya. It's very interesting. Krishna, he's got everything in Bhagavad Gita. They secure money by illegal means for sense gratification. Because they can't do it in the way that Krishna said. In the beginning I sent forth generations of men and demigods and blessed them. Perform this yajna. By this yajna, all desirable things will be bestowed upon you. All the facility for fulfilling our material needs, not our greed, but our needs, will be provided by the Lord, by yajna, and our spiritual desires will be satisfied as well. The time of Maharaj Yudhisthira, the cows were flooding the earth with milk. Milk's the real opulence. You get butter, yogurt, ghee, ice cream. You get so much opulence by yajna. So people would simply do the yajna, which is what? Harinama, Harinama, Harinama eva kevalam, kulu nasteva 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 gatiranyata. Kalea dosha didhe raja nastiyeku mahaguna kyutanade eva krishnasya mukta sangha panamvajaya. My dear king, this age is an ocean of inauspiciousness. But kirtanari vakrishnasya mukta sangha parambhaja. There's one good thing left in the sage. What is that? Simply by chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram. One can perfect one's life and go back to Godhead. So Prabhupada said the problems of life are not meant to be solved under nasty conditions like cats and dogs. We're not meant to struggle to acquire the basic needs of life. We have to work. Yes, but not struggle. So if we depend upon the mercy of Krishna and we serve God according to our honest ability, we work hard for Krishna, all the necessities of life will be bestowed. But if you're not honest, if you don't chant Hare Krishna, you're not an honest man. You're dishonest. If you don't believe and have faith in God, you're a dishonest man. You're being dishonest to yourself and to the Lord. If you know the process of chanting and serving the Lord, you don't have to engage in acquiring the basic necessity of life by illegal means. And you know for a fact that everyone out there, you know, not everyone, you think there's anyone out there who's paying every single rand in their taxes? Maybe some poor fool, but he's living in some ghetto somewhere. All the rich people, they know some scheme for cheating the government. Every businessman says, you know, this product I've acquired at this price, so I'm giving you it, you know, very good deal. Damn cheap, Bubba, they would say to the first devotees coming to India. Very cheap. But for you, I'm giving special price, and he's making it 500% profit. You have to do that a little bit in business. Huh? So there's so much cheating going on out there. Everyone's acquiring money by illegal. Where is that humble devotee of the Lord who's just depending, you know, like, who was that devotee who was worshipping the Ganges, who was making cups out of leaves and selling? Huh? Kolavecha Sridhar. There's an honest man. He was making cups, you know, and plates out of leaves. Whatever he got from that meager income, he was giving 50%, you know, for the worship of Mother Ganges. Yeah. This is a wonderful example. But nowadays, everyone's cheating because they don't have faith that Krishna will provide for them. So they have to cheat. And it's always seen, you know, in the government. They elect some government leaders and politicians, and oh, this honest man will lead us onto salvation. And, you know, 6 months later, the whole cabinet comes down because they were sharing the profits of the taxes. Devotees won't do that. They don't need to do that. They're satisfied with 1 rupee if that's what Krishna wants, or they're satisfied with $1 million if he wants us to engage in printing books and building temples. So they have to acquire their opulence by illegal means. Now King Indra, he's guilty of this to the upteenth degree in the most abominable way. Because he is, in this verse, he's posing himself as a renunciate, as a sannyasi, in order to steal the wealth of Maharaj Prithu. This is the lowest of the low. They're low, you know, by acquiring money, by illegally, but this is the most illegal means. He's putting on the saffron dress of a sannyasi and stealing the horse and going away. Because Prabhupada says elsewhere in the Srimad Bhagavatam that even today in India, the saffron-colored dress of a sannyasi is given great respect. Even today. I mean, India is not like, the glory of India has faded, you know, to a, you know, burnt crispy rose or whatever. The real glory, you can, the glory of India is, you know, in Vrindavan, Mayapur, at Juhu Beach, a few holy places, but the rest of India has gone to hell. Bharat Vas. Bharat means light, and Varsha means land. So the light of, the land of light and illumination has, you know, dwindled to a little tiny pale flame. Because they're trying to imitate the West. But even such, even so, today, the saffron-colored cloth of a sannyasi is still given respect. Prabhupada said the saffron cloth of a sannyasi announces to the world that that person has given up material life. He's renounced his material desires for service to the Lord. He has no desire to enjoy the material world, having tasted the immortal pleasure of devotional service. Etam samastaya paratman nishtam adyashitam purvatamayar mahadbihi aham tirishanti rantavaram tumomukannagin shevayava. Sannyasi prays, I shall cross over the insurmountable ocean of nescience by being firmly fixed in the service of the lotus feet of Krishna. This was approved by previous acharyas who were fixed in firm devotion to the Lord. So sannyasi lives a life of renunciation, using his body, his mind, and words in the service of the Lord. His main occupation is preaching Krishna consciousness to help others acquire. Because you can give me some sense gratification. And you love me because I can give you the same. If that sense gratification is disturbed, divorce. You approach someone in every case because you can get something from them. Every relationship is contaminated by this in the material world. That's why Krishna says, every activity in this material world is covered by some fault. The fault is, I, me, and mine. So every so-called loving relation, love means reciprocal, it's contaminated because I want something from you. So everyone is a bit wary of everyone else. No one really trusts even their wife, even their husband, even their child. Because everything's contaminated by that selfish desire. But not so in devotional service. A devotee, when he approaches someone, what does he want from that person? At best, what can a materialistic person give? Some dhanam, some janam, some sundarim, the jewels of his heart, the most precious thing, I'll give you some dhanam, some janam, some sundarim, some wealth, some sex, some glorification, I'll glorify you, some fame. What do they possess? Do they possess one iota of devotion for the Lord? So you think when a devotee goes to someone, when a sannyasi goes to the householder's door in Vedic culture and knocks on the door, that he's going there to get the milk? No, he's using that as an excuse to get inside so he can say, Griheshu Grihamedinam, with all due respect. Thank you, get out of here! Give him a boot outside. Tatikshava Kurnika Suridam. He has to be tolerant. He comes in on the plea of getting some milk, and they kick him outside because he starts preaching about how entangled they are in the dark well of Grihamedi life. Not Grihastra, but Grihamedi life. So he doesn't go there to get the milk. He can milk his own cow. He walk in the field, squirt, squirt, right out of the cow's, out of the udder, fresh from the udder. He can pick the fruit, chew the root, bathe in the fresh water, the Ganga, the Jamuna. What does he need? But he goes there to preach Krishna consciousness. So generally, he's trusted like that. In the Vedic age, the sannyasi was trusted because they knew, oh, he's not coming to ask something from us, really. He's coming to give something. Therefore, he was loved by everyone. The sadhu. Dhira dhira jana priyo priya karo nimat saro pujito. The six Goswamis with the perfection of that principle.
They were just like the ocean of love of God, and they were popular both with the gentle and with the ruffians, because they were never envious of anyone. Whatever they did, they were all pleasing to everyone, and they were fully blessed by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the people in general who are innocent in their search for an alternative to the struggle of material existence naturally put their faith in religious teachers. I mean, not only in India, but the general principle is that if someone appears to be renounced and giving his life to God, people want to put their faith in him because they want the answers to their own problems. It's a natural. People in general are innocent. There's God, there's the devotees, there's the innocent masses, and there's a few demons. But the mass of people, they want an alternative to the struggle for material existence. So who do they turn to eventually? They turn to the religious leaders. Because religion is a natural sentiment in the heart. Naturally, the nature of this world is such that one becomes frustrated. It's created that way. Just like they create a car to break down, so a few years later, you'll buy the parts. After 10 years, you spent more on the parts than you originally spent on buying the car. They make it like that, to break down. So Krishna makes the material world as a temporary, dukkalayam ashashvatam, a temporary place full of misery. So eventually, you'll come to your senses. Ah, Krishna. Oh, Krishna. Oh, Govinda, feeling your separation, I'm considering. It's natural. An intelligent person, he becomes frustrated. That's a sign of intelligence. You become frustrated in this world. They turn to God because God's not there. They have to turn to God's representatives. It's natural. People want religion. When Napoleon came to power in France in the 1800s, the churches of the country were all closed because the previous leaders, the revolutionaries, had closed them because of the abuse of the church. The church had been abusing the people for so long, acquiring power, prestige, money, land, and giving nothing to the poor peasants. They weren't arranging like the Brahmins would arrange for material facilities for the people. Whatever they got, they'd give to the poor people. And most important, they were giving knowledge. But the priests in France, you know, they were taking the riches for themselves, and they, because they were so polluted, they couldn't speak one word of truth. So the people hated them. So when the revolutionaries came to power, they closed all the churches, boarded them up. So Napoleon, if you know a little history, Napoleon came to power as the emperor. Ironic, but anyway. He came to power as the emperor a few years later, and he was thinking that it's important to open the churches, because without religion, there's no morality in society. And if there's no morality, everything degrades to barbarianism. So he was actually a religious man, Napoleon. So he thought, I want to open the churches. But his ministers advised him, don't open the churches. People hate the church because they were abusing the people for so long. So Napoleon, his very intelligent manager, rather than just taking the counsel of those people around him, he took a poll of the people. He actually sent his men out. They went through all through the provinces of France. They did a poll, man by man, woman by woman. Do you want the churches open? You know what the result was? 95% open the churches. Because the people, the natural sentiment is they want religion. They don't want false religion, but they want real religion. It's a natural sentiment in the heart of everyone. Because Prabhupada said, Krishna consciousness is not an artificial imposition on the mind. It's the natural sentiment of every living entity to want that. So therefore, there's religious representatives in every religion who people naturally turn to with a natural innocence and faith. Like a baby has a natural innocent faith in his parents. So the mass of people have a natural innocent faith in those who are representatives of God. So the most lamentable thing is when they put their trust in bogus spiritual leaders. If there's anything which is lamentable, the most lamentable thing is this. There's a saying, if you lose your money, you lose nothing. If you lose your health, you lose something. If you lose your Krishna consciousness, you lose everything. If you lose your health, okay. If you lose your money, if you lose your money, you've lost nothing. If you lose your health, you've lost something. If you lose your Krishna consciousness, you've lost everything. So after millions of births, they come to the human form of life, and they rise through 400,000 species of human life. Manushanam sahasresu kaschidyatati sideye.
out of thousands and millions of men, one may understand the goal of life is Krishna consciousness, and of those who have approached me, hardly one knows me in truth. So finally, they come to the conclusion, ah, I've evolved through 8 million species of life, 400,000 species of human life. Now I've become civilized. Now I know that this religion is necessary. Now I've come to this point. I'll turn it. And they get cheated. Oh. It's like, still we see in Russia, the people wait in line for bread for hours and hours and hours and hours. They get to the front of the line. And imagine if you got to the front of the line, and the person who, you know, was selling the bread, you give him the money, he takes your money and runs away. My bread. I've waited 5 hours for my bread. And he runs away with you. Ah. Oh. You would be so angry. So imagine you wait in line 8,400,000 species of life. You come to the human form of life. You wait 400,000 species to become a civilized human being. You know that you have to take the religion. You approach a representative of God. And he takes your money. Oh, that is the greatest rascaldom. To be cheated by someone who's posing himself as a representative of God. Eota eka kela chela, mata neda kapni para, tigaka neda kapni para, sahaja bhajana kachena mamu, sangaloi parena bhala. Thakur Bhaktivinoda. Here is an agent of Kali. He shaved his head, dressed himself like a Vaishnava renunciate. He's wearing tilak, neck beads, worshipping Lord Krishna, but his interest is actually in stealing another man's wife. Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's dressed himself like a renunciate, but in his mind he's thinking, how can I get that man's wife? Well, this is not going on only in Krishna consciousness. It's going on in other religions as well. One comes to the Guru for transcendental knowledge. The Guru passes on what he knows of Krishna, what he's heard of Krishna from his spiritual master. If that spiritual master only knows Dhanam, Janam, and Sundarim, he can only take you to hell. He can't take you to heaven. So to pose as a sadhu, when in fact you're a bogey, a material enjoyer, there's no greater sin, nor in the future should there ever be a greater sin than that. So as a result, people are now starting to lose their faith in religion. Prabhupada mentioned he knew one merchant in India, a grain merchant. You know, he was dressed, you know, in his khadi, his white khadi. But in the evening, he would close his shop and he would, you know, put on the saffron cloth, put some dirt on his face, you know, so people couldn't recognize him, patch on his eye and walk out and beg. He made more money by begging than he did it as a grain merchant. And Prabhupada told another story. He said in India there was sometimes the women, scrupulous women, they go to a holy place because they want to conceive a child by a saintly person. They go there to cause the man to fall down, so by having sex they'll conceive a child from some sadhu and that child will be elevated. So Prabhupada says cheaters and cheated, because some men, knowing this, they go and dress themselves as sadhus and pretend to be very advanced so that these ladies can come and conceive a child by them. This business is going on. The religions are not representing as it's not as it should be. In New Zealand, because New Zealand, they export their sheep meat to the Arab countries, the mullahs come to open the slaughterhouse. The New Zealand abattoirs, slaughterhouse, they agree, they build their slaughterhouses facing Mecca. They build a slaughterhouse facing Mecca. And the mullah comes from Saudi Arabia or Iran, and he cuts the first throat of the sheep. And then all the sheep after that are considered, whatever it is. Kosher? No, it's the Jews. It's considered, you know, challah. Challah, challah. Challah, challah. That's the poison that came from the turning of the ocean of milk. This business is going on, not only, you know, in Hinduism, but in Islam tradition, and we know the Christian tradition. So it's a very lamentable thing. So this false representation, it all started by Indra. He started the whole business. Before that, a saintly person would never misrepresent. So from this, Prabhupada said, from this moment, we're reading it, this is a historical moment, we're reading about it. This is a very, very significant verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, and very enlightening purports. We're reading about the historical moment when this cheating business began. Prabhupada said, it's more prominent in some ages than others. In that age, it wasn't so prominent. Therefore, you know, the sage Atri, the other sages, and Maharaj Prithu himself, they wanted to kill Indra for this nasty act he did. But Brahma intervened and said, no, he shouldn't be killed. Because Brahma said, if you oppose him, he'll even introduce more irreligious principles. Because he disappeared and Indra became invisible. So Brahma said, if you try to oppose him, he'll become even more nasty. If you feed milk to a snake, if you give good instruction to a fool, he becomes more angry, like giving milk to a snake. He becomes more envious. So if you try to oppose Indra, he's going to become more angry and he's going to introduce even more devious means of irreligion. So just let well enough alone for now. I'll deal with him later. Krishna will deal with him. This business has been going on a very long time. So many people are being cheated. Therefore, there's an essential need for a true religious process which will, with pure and strict followers who uphold real dharma. Damantu sakshat bhagavat panitam, real religion. What is real religion? Sabai pumsham paradharmo yata bhakta dhoksaji ahaituki apatiyata yayatma supasiditi. Supreme occupation for all man is that by which they can attain to the unmotivated, uninterrupted service to the Lord, yayatma supasiditi. Such service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. So we know that Srila Prabhupada has given us those teachings and that way of life. So he's no longer present. So we have inherited that dharma from Srila Prabhupada. So we have to maintain the purity of his teachings, both in thought and in deed. That, I would say, is our most important responsibility. Prabhupada said, at least maintain what I've done. Of course, the true disciple, if he's able to maintain, he also wants to expand upon the teachings of his spiritual master. Not expand upon, but rather illuminate them and spread them far and wide. So we have that responsibility. Prabhupada said, don't let this movement become like Christianity, which means some imitation, watered-down version of the original teaching. Sense gratification can enter a spiritual movement in a gross and subtle ways. And actually, ISKCON has run the gamut in this regard in the last 20 years. You know, fortunately, the leaders, our GBC, have been very good in that way of being able to detect both, you know, gross and subtle deviations in Krishna consciousness. And they protected Srila Prabhupada's institution. So let us all, as Prabhupada's representatives, and each in our own way, because I was reading yesterday, they say a society is not made up of cars and buildings and so forth. It's made up of people, each individual. So our society means each and every individual. So each and every individual has to be responsible to himself and to this movement to remain very pure and not let any gross or subtle deviations enter, so that we can actually stand as the beacon of light to the people of this age. So when a person really wants an alternative to material existence, he can come to Krishna consciousness and he can find real shelter and he can make advancement in spiritual life. By the mercy of Guru Shastra and Sadhu. So again, that means purity is the force. Of course, each of those maxims, they're each most important in their own way, aren't they? Prabhupada would travel the world and he would say, this Gurukul, this is the most important program in ISKCON. He said, because without the children, what is the future of Krishna consciousness? So he said it in Dallas. He said, this is ISKCON's most important program. But then when he was preaching to the scientists, he said, you know, religion will be defeated unless we speak up against these people because they're most prominent. So this is ISKCON's most important program, the BI.
Then when he preached to the book distributors, he said, book distribution is ISKCON's most important program. Then when he introduced deity worship, he said, if you don't worship Krishna nicely, you know, if everything else is going on, but not, Krishna's personally come. He's personally come. If you don't attend to his needs, then everything will fall apart. Everything will fall apart. So this is ISKCON's most important program. So Prabhupada would preach like that. And everyone should think that his service is the most important, because we want to have that feeling that we're doing something very dear to Srila Prabhupada. But we should know also at the same time, we should be simultaneously one and different, that if any project failed in Krishna consciousness, it would be the failure of the entire movement. Like all your body is important. If you lose one essential organ, you're finished. So each of the internal organs of ISKCON, the deity worship, the Sankirtan, the schooling, they're all essential to the proper growth of this movement. So each person should think that I am responsible to Srila Prabhupada, my spiritual master, for ensuring that this goes on in the proper way. So we can say, because today we're stressing the purity, we can say, you know, preaching is, without preaching, obviously everything will fail, everything will dry up. So we can give another lecture while we're here, that preaching is the essence. It's the most important. And we can also give a lecture that book distribution is the most important service, because the marathon's coming up. We can also say utility is the most important principle. But today, Prabhupada is stressing this principle that no one should cheat the others by posing himself as a renunciate, as a spiritual personality, and thereby cheat that person of his pure sentiment to know God. That is the greatest rascaldom. So therefore, we can say today that this principle is the most important, that purity is the force. And where does purity begin? Purity begins in our own hearts. Our own hearts. They say charity begins at home. So purity begins in our own hearts. We have to purify our hearts of lust and anger. These are the things which are keeping us from Krishna, and these are the things which are keeping us from purely serving our beloved spiritual master. So anything which opposes the pleasure of my guru, I should consider to be the most evil principle. So why should I hold on to my lust? If it displeases my guru, I should kick it out of my heart. If my anger displeases my guru, I should kick it out of my heart. If my greed displeases my guru, I should kick it out of my heart. That is our focus. What is pleasurable to spiritual master and what is displeasurable to the spiritual master. So let us kick all these things out as quickly as possible. They're there. They're there because we've invited them there. So it's hard to kick out an old friend. Right? We thought that lust was our friend. I love you. Right? She loves you, yeah, yeah. It's not love, it's lust. There's lust only, Arjuna. It's all devouring, sinful enemy in this world. So we thought that lust was our friend. We thought that anger was our friend. We thought that greed was our friend. We welcomed them into our hearts. And we served them selflessly for many lives together. We opened the doors of our heart and we invited lust and anger and greed in. Now they're there. It's hard to get rid of them. Welcome the guest, beat his departure. Common. You welcome the guest, but, you know, after a while, an old guest starts smelling like a fish after, of course, not a devotee. You want the devotee to stay as long as possible. Everyone's lamenting Bhakti Chirumaraj is leaving today, right? Or tomorrow. She's leaving in a few days. So everyone's lamenting. Oh. So when the sadhu comes, oh, please stay as long as possible. But when an ordinary guest comes, right, who's taking and just eating and flimera, watching the TV, speed his departure. So we've welcomed these guests into our heart because they weren't there originally. Originally we were in the sport of Krishna. But one day, somehow we opened the door and we let a little lust in. We became envious of Krishna's position. We fell to this world. And he's been there a long time, so it's hard to get rid of an old. Just like we may have attachments, right? To our old friends, to our mundane family members. In Poland, when it's Christmas time, you know, rather than stay and have the marathon, we have to have the marathon feast after Christmas or New Year's Day.
Because all the devotees want to go home to mommy and daddy and have a Christmas party and a New Year's celebration.
I think the same thing here, I remember, when I was temple president. We have to have the marathon festival, you know, like sometime in January. Everyone wants to go home and see mommy and daddy. Mama, daddy, I miss you so much.
Of course, if they're devotees, that's good. And even if they're not devotees, still we should not disrespect our parents.
But I'm talking to refine our devotional service. We have to become attached to Krishna, Krishna's devotees. If we retain any tinge of material desire, we have to take birth again. So we've invited lust, anger, and greed, attachment into our heart. Now, to ask those friends to go is a very difficult thing.
But again, parandrishta nivarantante, if we get the higher taste of serving Krishna, the spiritual master, and Krishna's devotees, Hari Guru Vaishnav, Bhagavata Gita. Bhagavata means devotee. So there's God, there's Guru, there's devotee, and there's devotee. Narottam Das Thakur says, two times devotees. Hari once, Guru once, Vaishnava, Bhagavata, Gita. Because to approach God is impossible without the Guru. And to properly serve the Guru is not possible without the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Because the spiritual master is pleased when he sees the Vaishnavas cooperating together as one Sankirtan, one congregation to preach the glories of the Lord. So that will please Srila Prabhupada if we can serve him in our loving dealings with each other. So when we get that higher taste of pleasing our God brothers and our God sisters our nieces and our nephews, right? Nieces and nephews, because there's so many spiritual masters, so then we have nieces and nephews. And in this way, if we cooperate, then we can cut out, we can kick out from our heart forever that lust, that anger, and that greed, and we can become a pure institution which can take over the world, as Prabhupada said, in 18 days. He said to Shyamasundara, I have a plan to take over the world in 18 days. He said, what is it, Prabhupada? Prabhupada said, you're not ready yet. So the preaching may be there, the book distribution may be there, the utility may be there, but if the purity is not there, our progress will be slow. By Lord Chaitanya's mercy, somehow it is going on. Prabhupada said, just as Ramachandra, Lord Ramachandra, conquered Ravana and his evil empire with monkeys and bears, so I am also preaching all over the world with my monkey and bear disciples. So Prabhupada loved us because he saw that initial, you know, he said that the great qualification of all these hippies is they have a spirit of renunciation. Although they were so attached to drugs and intoxication, sex, the spirit of renunciation. And in Prabhupada's association, that fanned, you know, and the sentiments were coming, you see. But we want to, within our lifetime, push this movement as far forward as possible. That is our aspiration as Prabhupada's disciples and grand disciples. And eventually, even within our lifetime, we will see grand disciples. Our happiness is only to see that this institution becomes complete as Srila Prabhupada planted the seeds. So that will be possible when we purify our hearts of the last attachment of lust and anger and greed. Open the doors of your heart and let Govinda in. When Govinda is there, he can work through the members of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness to establish this movement in the real glorious way that Prabhupada envisioned it. What we see now is not really what Prabhupada envisioned. It's the very pioneer stages. We keep purifying our hearts, scrub-a-dub-dub, scrub-a-dub-dub. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare. Cleanse our heart. Any association of the devotees, then the movement will expand unlimitedly. There's no limit to what we used to think in the old days. A few books was, you know, then a few devotees went on and distributed more books, and now temples. And so we're seeing gradually as the purification is there, the movement is expanding. It will expand to the perfect degree when our hearts become Ahaitukiya Patayata Yayatma Sripasidati. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Srila Prabhupada Ki, Sisi Radharadhanath Ki, Nitai Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Vo. It's a little late, we won't take any questions. Tomorrow maybe we'll take questions. Hare Krishna.